Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Woke Bros. I'm your co-host, Big Waz. I'll be flying solo today, but I did bring along a very, very special guest, my buddy, my friend, somebody who I consider a friend, my man Jake One, man, platinum recording producer, you know, lead. What are you, the what do you call yourself?
I'm definitely not the lead. like, you know, there's Hall and Oates, and there's Daryl Hall is the one, you know. He's the guy, and then Oates is the bitter one that just plays keyboard every once in a while. That's me.
Okay, so you're not Daryl Hall. We're going to let Mayor take the...
Not Daryl Hall. Mayor is Daryl Hall.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, man, we just wanted to tap in with Jake. He's always so busy, always has so many crazy things going on. as far as his career as a musician and a musical arranger. We do want to tap into the Snare Jordan series a little bit. But Rob, man, of course, Rob is piloting this episode as well as always, the junior super producer, Rob Lopez. Rob, you said you had something you wanted to ask Jake off the top.
Yeah, you know, Jake has worked with, I mean, you'll get into it, Waz. I'm sure you're going to get into it. But the one thing I did want to ask Jake, now you were at the LA Live show, we got you on stage, you did all, you know, you did your thing, it was great. But the one thing I wanted to ask you, and nobody asked you, which is fine, because I'm a big nerd about this, but what was it like working with John Cena? Because that was like his first thing, and now it's like his entrance music and shit. That's huge in the wrestling world, at least. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's an iconic song.
You know, the funny thing about the John Cena thing is I had stopped watching wrestling in the mid 80s when I was probably like 11 or some shit. Whenever they introduced like the like Elizabeth and all that, it just got a little too soap opera for me. As a little kid,
even at 11 years old, Jake, you were like, all right, this is ridiculous.
Man, I used to like there used to be this shit called NWA, which was the Atlanta version, and people would be bleeding.
Yeah, it was down south. That was like Ric Flair and all them.
Exactly, it was NWA.
It was hardcore.
It wasn't hardcore. It was just more like they did the realism thing. You know what I mean? Okay. So that's what really drew in a lot of people. And that was one of the first big ones that a lot of people liked, was definitely NWA. So I feel you there.
And that was like on TBS or something like that. But, you know, WWF just went real like corny. You know what I mean? Like, it just, yeah. It wasn't the same. Anyways, John Cena happened because I had a manager in LA. It's like my first manager and got me a lot of things. My boy Walt had met John Cena at KMEL in the Bay. And I don't know what John Cena, maybe he's doing an interview there or something. Anyways, my dude just gave John Cena some beats. And man, he just recorded to a bunch of shit. I remember when they told me about it, I was like, I wasn't up on wrestling, so I didn't even know if he was important, you know.
Right. For context, by the way, at the time, John Cena was a young – at the time, he was a young up-and-comer. He was a blue chipper, they called him. You know what I mean? He was, you know, young in the game. He just got started. And that whole, like, word life rapper John Cena era is, like, really what, like, set him all into another stratosphere.
He was like – he was like, Jay-Z, I'll battle you. Like, that was his thing, right? He was like, I'm going to be the battle rapper in jorts.
Yeah, that was his original gimmick. Yeah, it was bad, but he wasn't actually like, for a wrestler, he wasn't horrible.
He could kind of rap, man. That's what made it so funny. When I first heard, I think we did six songs. I don't know. There's quite a few.
Yeah, you have a lot of production credits on that album.
So yeah, that's.
Wait, hold on. Wait a second. An actual album came out.
Yeah, he released an album.
I thought he just recorded to a bunch of your beats.
Probably gold or platinum on the real.
Oh my god.
Yeah, bro, that shit went astronomic. Like, if I remember right, one of Jake's songs was actually John Cena's entrance music for a couple years.
I made the entrance music that's still to this day and like it's in commercials, all kind of
the trumpets. Know. You know the song that that's Jake One, like the most recognizable like
entrance music that's out today
of this generation. Yeah, easily.
Because obviously it's not more recognizable than the Stone Cold, Glass Shattering.
No. Whatever. But this new generation, you know, from like 2002 on, like the last probably like 10, 15 years.
He's got the most recognizable entrance music, and Jake One produced that beat.
Right. And you don't have to answer this, but, you know, you still get some love from the WWE, or they slip you a little
check? I'll tell you the whole story on that, because it's a good – and I tell a lot of people this one, youngsters – When we did the songs, basically Cena told me, like, look, man, Vince McMahon owns me. He owns everything. Nobody's going to get shit. You're going to get like paid up front and it'll be good, but you're never going to get royalties. He's either just like, you either do it or you don't do it. So at that time, you know, I had a job. I was like working at the courthouse and I might've been making $30,000 a year. Cool. And I think he offered me like 60 grand. And I couldn't turn it down. But I also like I didn't know that shit would be going to this day.
You know, right.
So basically I have no rights to it or nothing. I don't make no money on it. But
you got 60 G's for it at the time when you really
I did.
60 G's changed your life.
And that meant a lot. I bought like my first crib with that. So I mean it was great in that way, but you know, we're fucking 15 years later and that's just still making money. I'm like, damn, how much did I miss on that? You know what I mean?
Oh, dude, it's just that joint you
missed in everywhere. You missed in the hundreds. I don't think you missed in the millions.
I might have missed a million off of that. Wow. Like, just because the length of it is just gone for so long. But, you know, it just, you know, it's like, luckily that wasn't my last one. I always think about that. I'm like, damn, that could have been my last one. And it would just would have been over. Never would have made another big record.
You know, lucky for you, Jake, you've been fortunate enough to have a career in which you've
worked which with is rare. Pretty much you know, that's everybody. A rare thing for people, you know, like. Not many people made one in 2004 and 2018 or 19. You know, it just doesn't work that way in general.
Or they have, Jake, but they haven't been ones that are with the likes of Schoolboy Q and Kendrick Lamar and Jay-Z and Rick Ross and Future Kodak and Drake and J. Cole. Like, I mean, I could keep going, Jake.
One, you know, right. But I'll give John Cena credit for another thing because he's the first person I heard use the word bro. Like, that was his thing. You know, people like, bro, blah, blah, blah. He was so about that. I just remember every time I talked to him, that's all he would say. There was a problem with clearing the sample, actually, for The Time Is Now. And he was like, these Canucks, bro, they don't want to clear the sample. It was like a Canadian record I used.
Is that a derogatory term? Do we have to censor that?
No. Hey, I saw a lady in my gym today with a shirt that said Canuck with the flag on it. So yeah, I don't know.
Oh, okay, word.
I'm back. It's a hockey team.
I think they rep that one. That's not, you know.
By the way, shouts to Canada, man. Toronto advanced into the Eastern Conference Finals yesterday. We're taping this on a Monday. And this will probably be out by Thursday, you think, Rob, or Wednesday?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Whatever. But yesterday we had an amazing slate of NBA playoff games. I know Jake One is one of the biggest sports fans I know, particularly NBA basketball. He's all about it.
Right.
Obviously, he's still mourning the Supersonics, but we don't need to get into that. But I know you enjoyed yourself.
I follow all these other things now because I'm not wrapped up in my shitty team, which might have been a blessing in disguise, you know?
Yeah. Well, there you go. So, man, last time I saw you was L.A. When was the L.A. live show, Rob? That was January?
January 8th, I think, like January 18th.
January of this year, you showed up to the show. You did your thing. Obviously, you're constantly working. I know we're allowed to say that Tuxedo has a single rolling out pretty soon here.
Yeah, it's coming out tomorrow. And ironically, I actually was down in L.A. to make the last song for the album. For the live show, I was down there for that specific purpose. And that song is actually coming out tomorrow that we made that day.
That's awesome. And I know we can't really get it too much into the album, the project, but I do want to ask what the fans can expect as far as the sound of the album, because I think what you guys are known for, like a soul funk type of vibe to what you guys do. What can the fans expect from the next one?
I mean, it's, you know, everything we do is pretty much going to be staying in that lane because that's kind of what we made it for. And, you know, Mayor has his other outlets to do the kind of stuff he wants to do. And I obviously do all kind of other random shit. So, you know, we're always like trying to do something different within the context of like that sound. So it's more just going for that, you know, but.
So
yeah, we're definitely not dropping a trap song or nothing like that. Like, I don't think we'll have that on deck. So.
Hold on 1 second, Rob. My TV just freaking turned on. Let me just turn it off 1 second.
Okay.
Man, they need to give me the John Cena plaque. Like, what's going on with that? I need to find out about that.
Yeah, dude. I mean, they invite you to like WrestleMania thing, anything like that, or no? They just cut you the check.
I
see
you. You know, I haven't talked to Cena in a long time, but I went to wrestling when he first started using it. I went and saw it, and it was definitely kind of weird just seeing that. But then I was like, damn, man, these are just not the kind of people I hang out with. Like, you know, you go to some events, you'd be like, damn, am I one of you guys? Because I don't think so.
No, yeah, that's definitely a different crowd for sure. I mean, it's either like you get in like, you know, a bunch of kids with their families, or it's like,
right,
you know, a sweaty large man who's just yelling at a soap opera. I'm just confused. I watch it for like for entertainment, you know what I mean? Like, I just think it's right. funny as hell. But like other dudes, they're like invested.
There were people putting it on the line. I was like, wow, you really care.
All right, Jake, I'm back. I know I listened to enough of you guys' stuff. It's definitely summer barbecue cookout type of vibes. Like,
for sure.
You know, I think of Frankie Beverly and Maze, or, you know, just those type of that type of sound and that feel. You guys are dropping the single tomorrow. We're just at the tip of summer starting. Is that part of you guys' calculation?
I mean, we always like to put things out summertime because it's just that's just the kind of music we make. You know, the G-Funk, you know, all that type of stuff is clearly summer weather. Like usually the first summer day in Seattle, I always like go play Big Pimpin' or something like that, because it's just the dog pound Big Pimpin', not Jay-Z.
Oh,
the real Big Pimpin', that's a better Big Pimpin'.
Whoa, relax, yeah. Man. This is a New York City centric podcast. I know.
Yeah, we're not rolling with that. Not for this time. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a part of it. You know, you just want to have the right type of, you know, type of vibe for that. And it's funny, when we do shows in the winter, it feels weird to me when it's cold outside and be performing that music. I'm not even gonna lie. But you know, it's not gonna stop us from doing it. But
yeah, so obviously you guys like making money, so you look forward to hitting the road all the time. Have you guys announced anything? Do you guys have any designs on hitting the road anytime soon?
We will announce a tour, actually, I think tomorrow as well. So it's going to be interesting, because we're going to some places that I've never been to with Tuxedo. So that's going to be cool.
Okay.
And, you know, our mainstay is, like, for us, we're really popular on the West Coast, you know, which is – makes sense, because we make West Coast centric music.
Thanks.
So, you know, but we are going to hit Texas for the first time, and a couple other places. So yeah, it's going to be fun.
So a lot of our listeners may or may not know this. And we kind of referenced it early when we talked about how much Jake loves the Seattle Supersonics, or RIP used to love them. But Jake's public in his declaration that he will never do a show in the city of Oklahoma City.
Is the band still on?
Have you lifted the band for this tour?
The band is 1,000% still on. It also helps that they have no interest in seeing us there. I don't think either.
Okay.
I don't even, well, I guess we're going to Texas, so that's like remotely close. Maybe we'll drive by in the tour bus and I'll like flip everybody off or something.
Yeah, flip everybody off. Maybe egg the Energy Solutions Arena.
I mean, you know, on the real, it's real beef with him. Some dude created a fake Facebook account of me, an Oklahoma City fan, with my name. And was like sending people racist messages.
No way.
Swear to God. Like, what kind of crazy shit is that?
So
I was definitely in damage control. Like, what the fuck? But then I was like, damn, I really must have pissed these dudes off. Like, what did I even say that would have you that hot to try to, like, you know, do something like that? You know, luckily that account had like two friends or something. So, you know, people knew not to take it serious.
That's pretty incredible and a pretty far place to take it, especially considering all you said was that you will never bring a tour there, or if somebody tries
I'm sure I say way more disrespectful stuff about the city.
Oh, about the prairie?
I mean, you know, I might have, like, you know, felt like Aubrey McClendon's downfall was deserved, you know, like...
So you've taken it deep on the internet in public on these homies.
Yeah, and unfortunately, for me, I guess I have something to lose, and most of them don't. So
yeah, that's a big fact.
It definitely put it in perspective. I'm like, I can't just be arguing with random people on the internet. It's not a good idea.
No, and I've actually in my more recent years, man, I've honestly just taken to, I don't engage with people who aren't hitting me with like positivity, right? Like, right. I'm not doing back and forth, blah, blah, blah. If you say something even on the line of disrespect, you're just going to get muted. And I'm just going to have
to move on
with my life. But yeah, to keep it with the tour, I remember I saw you guys back in New York City. That must have been like, what, 2 years ago?
Maybe
about 2 years ago. I know it was in 2018. And you guys' stage show is just crazy. Like, it's a lot going on, a lot of moving parts. I know you guys had the button for that first tour. became a meme in and of itself on the internet, which was dope. Have you guys put any thoughts into the new tour, the new sort of theatrics that you want to put into that?
I mean, you know, at a certain point, it becomes more about that because you've been doing these songs for so long and you're tired of them. So you got to like find these wrinkles to make it interesting. And, you know, the more shows you do, you kind of like, you'll see what works and what doesn't. You can kind of adjust, you know. I think for us, it's kind of interesting because we're not the best musicians. We don't sing the best, but we know how to make the kind of music that we want to hear. So for us, we're kind of like approaching it on some DJ shit, like how we even put our sets together. It's like really like a DJ thing with people performing instead of being like, we're going to jam for 20 minutes on one song. Like we're never be good enough at doing that kind of stuff, you know?
That's incredible because a lot of people don't know that, you know, part of a live show is crafting an experience for the people, right? Like they, at the end of the day, they've heard these songs hundreds, if not thousands of times already, right? So when they come to see you guys perform live, they want to see some added stuff, stuff that they don't get from just streaming it on Spotify or Apple Music or Tidal. I know you guys are snickering at home, but people do subscribe to Tidal. You know, so I think it's dope that I'm just saying, Jake. But I think it's dope that you guys, you know, actually put some level of craft into your stage work and you know, as somebody like me who I'm not afraid to say it. I went to Playboy Cardi's show and literally he's just rapping over a track, right? Like and part of the show, he's not even rapping his own lyrics. He's just literally up there dancing.
I mean, I think that's just what the newer generation, you know, a lot of them, they just put the song on, jump around, and their fans just want to do that with them. And
you know what? That's what I was going to say.
And then that's the experience for them, you know? Like, that's what they're going for.
The kids were loving it. They were macho. They did not care that they were just listening to a DJ press play on something and watching a guy just move around on stage. Like,
it's the same thing like a walkthrough or, you know, people just want to see a celebrity, you know, on that level. And it's really about that. But when you do see somebody that has a show and they got those songs, it's just devastating. Like, you go to a Drake show, you're like, this dude got 2 hours of hits.
Yeah,
and he's really performing it, or Kanye, you know, in his peak.
Kanye, Cole right now. Cole takes his stage show right now. Super serious. He takes his stage show. Obviously, he's rapping every lyric. But again, like you said, these are guys that have dropped some of the biggest songs in music. And you know, speaking of which, man, I love your place in the game, Jake, because. You had a post recently. I don't know if it was the Schoolboy one or if it was a text. I can't remember. But you were like, I think the Call in My Spirit that I did with Kodak is about to go platinum. And you were like, yo, not bad for old washed up backpacker. Right. And the thing is, for me, like, I think that's what makes you so ill, in my opinion, is that you have an ear for what's going on right now. And you know, you do have your roots in, you know, this sort of Mad Lib, old school aesthetic backpacker. Yeah. You know, you are a tried and true backpacker. Like, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, for sure.
You're one of the most least insufferable backpackers I've ever met, to be quite honest with you. Like, might be one of my only friend backpackers that I have. or who I would actually.
I think being from Seattle, like we just liked all the different kinds of hip hop in a different way than like the New York backpack people were like, this it's is the real hip hop and fuck everything else. You know what I mean? And for us, you know, I enjoyed a lot of West Coast shit as much as I enjoyed the East Coast stuff. So
Is Farside backpack? Yeah.
Nah, they were popular. I mean, they went gold or something like that. I mean, the music was probably, you know, you got jazzy samples and shit and sample everything. But nah, I wouldn't say that's, I mean, I guess, you know, I think backpack is being like just that real like scientifical foolery where they're just like the beats don't make any sense and it's just like a lot of just, you know, fucking dictionary words and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like no chorus, literally just the guy just talking about science, you know.
Which is obviously the opposite of a Kodak calling my spirit, right?
Right. I mean, but in all honesty, man, I don't have any idea with this stuff. I just make the shit I like. And it turns into what it turns into. I wouldn't have called that as being like a song that was going to pop off. Or even when I did the idea, I was just like, oh, this is cool. You know, it wasn't even necessarily like, ooh, I want to get this to somebody young or whatever.
It's you just, made I've been the fortunate idea
to team up with these other guys, okay. You know?
That's what I was going to ask you. How does Jake One's beat even find, make its way into the hands of a Kodak Black?
And it's really just, you know, when I got away from just being like, I'm the guy doing everything and really just got mm-hmm. into like, oh, I'm just going to make ideas and melodies and stuff like that. And I started giving it to Southside and Dahi and, you know, all the different guys I've worked with. They're the ones that have got really their finger on the pulse of, you know, what's
right.
The what's right current, shit, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Cause me, I, man, honestly, the stuff I usually like does not pop off.
Guess what though? It takes somebody with a limited amount of ego to actually even, you know, accept and acknowledge that, right?
Right. I just know that's not my place. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And I'm cool with that.
The funny thing about that Kodak song is that he had spit the words a cappella somewhere. And my one of my young homies who's a big Kodak fan, he had played it for me. He's like, yo, this joint is hard, right? Like, your beat or whatever, I hadn't heard it yet. And then the album came out, wow. I finally heard it, and I was like, oh, this is dope. And then I find out that it's your beat. It's kind of crazy how that would happen. But that to me, that just shows me universally just having craft and having some level of taste is still going to matter, right? Like you can say what you want about a lot of these kids and, you know, oh, the music is disposable, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. I think if you have a level of taste and craft and like people like Southside and Metro, like these guys have incredible taste in music, right? Even though they're at the front of what's coming out. Like these are people who are artistic and have taste. That's why I kind of bristle when people be like, well, a lot of this shit is disposable and garbage.
I mean, I think old people just say that about whatever the new thing is. I mean, when Run DMC came out, my dad was like, this is just a bunch of noise, you know? So and he loved free jazz and I could never understand that shit. So, I mean, it's just something that's going to happen with every generation. And, you know, I was always joking when Soulja Boy came out that like in 10 years, people are going to be like, yeah, man, they're not making that real music like Soulja Boy anymore. And we're pretty much at that point, you know, like people be like, you know, it's an era. This hip hop is a young man's game. It's dope that we have 45, 50 year old rappers that are still good.
Wow, it's nice to have that now. It is nice. That's something that's much different than when I was like, I want to say 7 or 8, when I became like conscious of my rap fandom, right? Like realizing like, no, this is the shit that I love. This is what I want to listen to all the time. In like, say, 1994, 95, there were no 40-year-old rappers. Shit,
Melly Mel guys are probably only 30-something, and you were like, right. Oh, you think of Melly Mel as being 100 in 1994, you know? Like, right. It just,
I don't even know that there were 30 something year old rappers in 95, 94.
There weren't a lot of them if there were, because it just, the shit was moving so fast. And we're kind of in that space now where things move really fast.
Right.
And, you know, there's, the thing is now that I will say the biting and just people just copying styles is just so flagrant that I don't even know whose song it is a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Because
the biting is
sounding like, oh, is this a Playboi Carti song? No, he's just some other guy that just sounds like him, you know, or somebody comes out with a new thing and everybody's on it, you know.
Everybody's on it. Everybody has their own version of it already.
And they can put it out so fast that it makes it seem disposable, whereas people have been doing that. But, you know, we had to wait 3 months to press it and all these things. And now it's like it's instant, you know.
Right. There's no gatekeeping going on. There's no like
at all.
There's no barrier to entry. And to me, I don't know, the fact that the music has been democratized in a certain way, it's like it's kind of cool, right? Like, and I think it's cool for the up and coming guys and the young guys, like somebody like Cole, who you've obviously worked with a lot and you have an idea of what his process is, right? Like he takes the album format so seriously and this, that, and the third and whatever. But he puts out Middle Child and that shit does numbers. We don't know when the next album's coming out. We don't know this, but I don't think we're worse for Cole having the ability to just straight up no marketing, no nothing. Obviously, the label is at a point with him where it's like, dog, every time you come out, you make a ton of money for us, so you can do what you want, but he just put it out, right? And it's and it's a hit. It's a big song. It's played everywhere. Like he's gonna play this.
It's a different kind of hit. Like it's a hit with a lot of rapping and not a lot of singing. So I mean, it's you know, I really, it's funny you said democratic process. That's really how I look at it, because before, when you put an album out, like, and I really related to this from in the G Unit days, because if you caught the single with 50, you were just going to make way more money, right? And it didn't really matter if you had a banger on the album or not. It was never going to be the single and get radio and all these things. And now they drop the album and whatever the song that comes out the gate hot, that's the single.
Yep.
And it's, really, it's should have always been, you know, like
the people pick it now, right? It's not a bunch of mark,
you know.
100%. Right. It's not a bunch of marketing cats at your label, coming up, having a meeting with the PDs at whatever radio station after they done greased their palms, and being like,
right,
okay, this is the song we're going with. People just putting out the album is like, oh shit. The like, obviously we know some people are gaming their streams, which ironically J. Cole touched on the 21 record, which again is a type of record that you wouldn't even think would be a hit. That's a hit. That's a hit record, right?
I love that shit, because they use this like record that I've been wanting for a long time. And I was like, damn, man, my guy used $1,000 record on this beat and it's a hit. And I feel like that shit never happens. Never happens.
Oh, so that record is actually one of those rare records. Just for some background.
That I was telling you about,
For the listeners, Jake One is a record collecting fanatic. He has a sickness.
Yeah,
he has a problem.
Yeah,
like it's his. Sure. It's pretty much your only vice at this point, right, in your life.
I mean, you know, other guys buy cars and jewelry, and I buy records. That's my thing.
But this record that they sampled is one of those rare records, which like not a bunch of them were pressed up, or they only sold them in Japan or Germany, blah, 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 blah. I remember
the story of that record is crazy, because it's called East to Underground, and it was a military group, I think, from the U.S. in Germany. And they made like a live soul album. And it's just, for whatever reason, it's just really dope. And it's, you know, people been knowing about that record for 15 years, you know, like it's been a sought after piece. So to hear it, like, and then 21 rapping on it, he, you know, he's one of my favorites. So like, that was just amazing. Like, I definitely had to salute Dahi for that one.
But see, that's what I mean though, right, Jake? Like, that's not the type of song that you bring to the label and say.
They weren't like, oh, this is the hit.
No.
No way.
No shot. Way. But everybody heard the song, the people responded, and now that's what it is, right? And to a certain extent, the labels are still marketing to the streaming services and blah, 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 blah. Like, you still do get top billing, but at the end of the day, people got to press play on that thing over and over.
There's plenty of songs that come out with that initial hype and just drop.
Right.
They don't stay on that chart for very long. So like, that's how you know you really got one, is if it's on there for like 20 weeks, you know, if it's on the Hot 100 or whatever, because there's things that'll debut like top 15 and only last like 4 weeks because it just didn't, you know, it was all hype. People didn't really want to listen to it for that long. You know?
So you said Dahi is a collaborator of yours, a partner.
Yeah.
I know he's right. Really close to the TDE camp. Is that how you ended up on the Crash Talk album?
Man, definitely through Dahi. I met Dahi, I don't know, probably like 7-8 years ago. And I don't exactly remember who I met him through, but we were just like, you know, we both liked each other's music and stuff. And we just kind of been cool. Like, he's been in my house. Like, he comes out here every once in a while. But he's just, you know, I'll send him some ideas, and then he happened to be working on the Schoolboy Q stuff, and a couple of them stuck that we did.
Tales is crazy. I love the Black folks right, record, but Tales is just crazy. That's a crazy, and obviously Schoolboy did what he does. I think that song is incredible, Jake, because that's Schoolboy displaying all the things that make him what he is, make him individual and special. And for whatever reason, your beat was able to bring that out of him, man. I listened to that song every single day since it dropped.
I think he, you know, what I always liked about him, and you know, I will say with him, Kendrick, those were the first like new rappers at that point when they first came out that I liked. Because there was a long period, I just didn't really like any of, like, a lot of those rappers they were trying to push in the blog days, I wasn't really fucking with.
I mean, we were coming out of the Snap era, right?
But like, I mean, just in general, it just wasn't, and for whatever reason, those guys, I really liked a lot, and I made an effort to meet up with them and give them beats. You know, early on, I met Schoolboy when he was Kendrick's hype man. That was the first time I met him.
Wow.
And, you know, I gave him beats even back then, and we did some stuff that just had never come out. Right. So it was dope to finally get a couple with him at this point. And what's dope about him is he raps over these really weird beats,
yep,
but it's still popular, which is really hard to do. You know, he's still doing, you know, some of his shit is borderline backpackish. You know what I mean?
Facts. Big facts.
But his personality is so big. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it just works. And you know, a really crazy thing about the Tales, that original idea, me and G Coop did, I think like in 2014, there was a song for that, over that same idea for DS2 that they ended up not using at the last minute.
Wow.
Yeah. so we did Percocets and Strippers. That other song was supposed to be on there as well. And apparently Hope was on it. I never heard it, so I don't know how real that is. But
wait,
is what I was being told.
DS2, the same beat concept from Tales, Future had it, and you said Hope was on it too? That's what you heard?
That's what I heard. I never heard it, but it was something I did with Southside, so the beat was a bit different.
Aggregate it!
Yeah, we got to aggregate that.
Boston over that. They're going to be mad at me over that.
Wait, who's gonna be mad at you? Southside and
This is all alleged.
Man, I just don't want people asking me for it.
Asking you for what? For the actual Hov and Future.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah,
no, yeah, yeah. That's ridiculous.
Right. To be clear for all the listeners, this is all hearsay.
Rumor and conjecture. That's all it was. Jake said he never heard it, but he heard that was a possibility. That would have been interesting. Although, I'm not going to lie, man. I'm over Hov versus. Not to be disrespectful. I love Hov too much to, like, actually. Like, I remember when Drug Dealers Anonymous came out and people were like, ooh, Hov. I was like, guys, is this even a top 200 Hov verse? Like, we know Hov has.
The problem is we just have too much of his music that he was great in.
Yeah.
You know, it's always going to be hard to compare it, you know?
That's my problem. Like, I still listen to The Evils. I'm sorry. Like, that verse can't compare to not one verse on The Evils. Sorry. Or Dead Presidents.
Right. I mean,
or even The Watcher 2. I mean, like, get the hell out of here with that. But, you know, I'm actually pretty happy that didn't occur. But that's...
Because the Schoolboy record turned out great. So, I mean, you know, sometimes it's always interesting to see you know, I've had this happen a lot of times where somebody will cut a record to a beat I make, and then it, for whatever reason they don't use it, and someone else uses it later on. And sometimes it really can be 5 years later. And that's probably because I don't really necessarily make like the sound of the moment ever. So it can still ride, you know, 5 years later.
Man, just before we get you out of here, because we don't want to take too much of your time, I just want to tell the listeners, last year, whenever Nip's album came out basically the winter of last year of 2018.
Right.
Mariano, of course, I had did a podcast on the now defunct Waz Speaks, RIP. Me and him were talking about the upcoming releases for top of 2018. And he had said to me, he was like, yo, I'm really looking forward to this Nip album. Mariano's somebody who like, I'm like, damn, like you really love Nipsey Hussle like that? And he's like, yeah, like that's my dude. I think this album is going to be incredible. He's worked a really long time on it and he worked hard on it. And then it came out and Jake actually texted me and was like, yo, bro, you want to listen to this Nipsey Hussle joint? It's very fucking dope. And I'm not just saying that because I'm on it, because I've been on other shit and I don't text you about it. But I remember distinctly hearing from you and you were just like, yo, this project is incredible. So I just want to hear you talk about like your work that you've done with Nipsey.
Yeah, I mean, I thought in general, you know, I worked on that project with Mike and Keys and with Nip, probably from 2015, like we had started doing stuff for that. And some of that stuff came out on like Sloss and Boy 2. Some of it was on Victory Lap. But yeah, it was kind of crazy because I feel like the people that would have really liked it when it first came out just weren't even tapped in to understand that he was doing that kind of music.
Right.
Because of just what, you know, the optics of like, oh, he's a West Coast rapper.
He's a West Coast rapper. Really, and it's not just that. He's like the gangbang and stuff is very central to his aesthetic.
For sure. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, you know, what's funny about Nip is that, you know, I couldn't even say that I was all the way into stuff until Crenshaw came out and everybody around me was just playing that. That shit was so big in Seattle. Like the song Check Me Out and a couple other things that it just made me a fan. And I didn't even know he was doing those kind of records. Cause I still was thinking Hustle in the House, you know?
Right.
And he reached out to me, you know, probably around that time. And, you know, he come through to Seattle pretty often and I would just get up with him and play him beats and send him stuff. And, you know, like Loaded Bases was something that started like 2015 or 16, I think. The one with Swizz, the Bend Down joint, we probably did around that same time. I actually was there when he cut that one.
Damn, that's you. The Swizzy joint is you? Yeah. Wow. I thought Swizz did that.
I mean, because he's a producer, I guess, but you know,
yeah
I
definitely that's probably why.
that was initially going to be the intro to the album, but they switched it up and they actually ended up with a way better, perfect intro for the album.
Right.
But yeah, no, like, you know, I was lucky to hang out with him and really sit with him multiple times and pick his brain. And what I really just liked about him is he was just 1,000% honest. And it was, a lot of these artists really like to sell dreams to the producers. And it was just never really that kind of thing. It was just like, yo, I'm trying to make something that's really, you know, with this, what I want to get across, this message is serious to me. It wasn't like, you know, he didn't want to do the obvious, like, let's make the West Coast hit. You know, he wasn't going for that. He told me he wanted to make Thug Motivation for the West Coast. And I think he really did that. And I think he wanted production that kind of fit that Rick Ross, you know, MMG type stuff. So that was partly why he had reached out to me.
And I think if you listen to Nipsey's music, and it's not a diss to him to say he's very influenced by Ross, like the rhyme patterns that they like, it's very similar, right? In the best way possible,
voices, you know?
Right?
Right. They just have very different voices, and you know, he's not as silly as Ross, man. Ross is, hilarious. You know what I mean? Like, and I think he's dead serious some of the time.
Right.
But some of the shit he says is just super funny, you know?
Yes.
Like, there's always
a death. And he's playing it for laughs, though, you know?
Right. Yeah.
But I think it's interesting, Jake, to hear you say that, like, as he's, as you guys, as you're playing him stuff and he's recording to your stuff, he's telling you that, like, the music is intentional, right? Like, he has a specific intention with what he wants to get across with his music.
Yeah, because, I mean, the label was trying to get him to do all kind of songs with every, you know, they want him to do all kind of radio stuff. And
yeah,
he really didn't want to do that.
AIO or something, or do the Chris Brown record. And not to say that these aren't talented artists, but
right. You
already know, man, they probably get him to do a Starships type of record. Like, you know what right. These labels
it,
want.
It was just, it was dope that he actually got to do it the way he wanted. And he stood on that, because a lot of dudes don't. They, you know, they're going to chase a hit because that's really where the money is. But I think that was also the part of him being the guy he was with the entrepreneurial stuff, where he can have that pressure on him with the music to make the money. You know, that wasn't really where he was eating like that. You know, he was doing all right on that. It was great. But he had all these businesses and stuff where he's just like, nah, I'm going to do what I want to do. You know, and there's very few people that are empowered like that in the music business. You know, I think we're seeing that more and more because guys are doing better business. They're coming into it more enlightened. So they're controlling more of their shit, which is great. You know, that's what it should be. It shouldn't be, you know, guys that running these labels telling artists what they should be doing, you know, like, unless you're just that kind of guy and you want hits, that's fine too. You know, there's a place for all.
And by the way, you could be Flo Rida. We're not going to poo-poo, you know, right. that. I mean, I'm sure many people would love to, but like, to me, it's like, you know, if that guy makes a decision that maybe his stuff doesn't have to have the most artistic integrity, but he will get to be one of the, you know, one of the headliners of Jingle Bells, you know, Z100 or whatever every year, like, then that's cool, right? Like, then if that's what this guy wants to do. But I just think it's fascinating that, you know, somebody like you who had the opportunity to collaborate with Nip, to like say that, like, look, man, like, the guy had an intention with what he wanted to do. Like, his music was part of what he wanted to express, right? Because a lot of times, and I feel like I've listened to enough Hov interviews, and even in his book, he said, he's like, a lot of times I write the rhyme a certain way, and then it ends up meaning three different things to the fans when they receive it, right? Like, in a way, it's like he didn't even mean to make it so ill. The music just came out, and it took – so, you know, like, the artists always say, once you put the music out, it no longer belongs to you, right? Like, the people get to scrutinize it and decide what it is. And so it's interesting that Nip is like, no, like, this is what he was trying to preach in his music, and he actually did it. Like, the message was actually received, and that's just not always the case, you know?
Yeah, he was really trying to make something truly great. And not something for just the day or, you know, the radio or none of that. So, I mean, I always thought that was just super honorable and that he stuck to his guns, you know, like, and he did it. I mean, it bothers me that it's like charting and all this shit now. I feel like it should have been doing that the whole time. But I understand, like, I know what it is. It's turned into something way bigger than any of that. But It bugs me because I'm like, he should have been here to fucking experience this, you know? Like, that's, but, you know, what can you do? You know, it's done. You know, the other part that I think, you know, was unique about him is he wasn't a rapping ass rapper dude. Like, he wasn't in there writing lyrics all day. Like, I was in the studio with him, you know, probably 10 times, and I saw him rap one time. You know, like, he wasn't the guy that just was like, I'm going to rap every day. But when he really felt it, he did it. And it was special.
It was phenomenal. And I think that was
very different than, you know, there's the new way is to do like 150 songs for a project, you know, and put them all on Instagram and your stories and let everybody else decide what the right shit is. And, you know, that works for some people, but I like this old school aesthetic in that way of just really focusing on, you know, a certain amount of songs and making everything important. You know, it felt more important than like a lot of the things I've worked on.
That's incredible, man. I just do want to say Loaded Bass is probably definitely my favorite Nip song ever. And obviously your beat is incredible. The verse that he spits when he starts with the sitting on my Lincoln, I start thinking, like what he's saying on that damn song is just incredible. And I think it's a testament to what you do as an artist, Jake, that your music was able to draw that inspiration out of Nip. And I know you wouldn't want to take that kind of credit, but I truly believe that the song was special and Nip felt like he had to be special on it. So I want to thank you for doing that for all of us.
Thank you, man. No, I mean, I just, like a lot of these, just I really am just glad that I found my way into that and got to be a part of it, you know, for sure. Like that was, and I knew when we did it, I thought it was a great record. But, you know, there's been other times I thought I did a great record and it didn't really get that kind of light. So you kind of just never really know.
Well, shit, man. Thank you, Jake, for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it, man. Obviously, when you guys touch down in L.A., I will make sure that my ass is in that building when Tuxedo finally makes their way to L.A. I know it's going to be a...
You only saw an East Coast show. That's not a home game.
Oh, that's not how it gets crazy?
I mean, L.A. is a home game for us, you know?
That's incredible.
Sure. They love California. They love us. Like it's crazy. Like I, you know, and we've talked about it before. It was like, damn, if they didn't like us, then we would just be doing it wrong. Cause we really are making it for California and the West Coast in general. So yeah, it's been pretty crazy. I sometimes just can't believe what it's turned into, you know, cause it just was something we just did for fun. So.
Yeah, they got you in Korea and Japan and all kinds of places, man, performing to fainting fans and all of that. You a superstar, Jake.
I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but yeah, my daughter told her teacher at school that I won a Grammy because they were talking about somebody else in Grammys. Like, my daddy won a Grammy. So, I mean, you know.
Wow. That's a dope flex.
I know. I was like, yeah, I don't know. It's not quite the same. Not Duke Ellington. Chill. But, you know, how do you tell an 8-year-old that?
But shit, man. Thank you again. The Grammy Award winning super producer, Jake One, man. Thanks again for coming on, Jake.
All right. Peace. Why is Neil Lamprey the journalist?
Relax.
No longer Big Wise. No longer Big Wise.
Yeah, yo, I'm gonna get an ascot tomorrow. Don't worry. I'm gonna wear a fedora with all of that. Bro.